Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 370, and today we are talking about books being released on July 12th, 2022, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Vanessa Diaz, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Vanessa, hello!
Hi, friend. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I got very excited and texted you the other night because the question on Final Jeopardy, which no one got... I got
really?
It. Yeah, I know, right? The answer was,
so funny.
The answer was, this U.S. city now has 10 times the population of the other U.S. city for which it was named in 1845. The answer is Portland. It's Portland, Oregon. And, like, people don't believe me when I tell them that Portland, Maine, you know, like, Portland, Oregon is named for Portland, Maine. And I'm not saying, like, Portland, Oregon isn't as good as Portland, Maine, even if it isn't. I'm just saying, like, you know, it's just a fact. It's named for it. And my husband was even like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I just knew that Portland, Oregon was named for Portland, Maine. So I texted you. I was very excited.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if it's the bias of where I live, but, like, if you immediately tell me, like, what's a city that has another, like, named after it in the same kind of, I'm like, Portland always comes to mind. It's just, like, hello, so.
It's a fact. Another fact is that we are recording a few minutes later than we planned on it because I had a serial emergency this morning.
Now, we didn't get to banter before. We saved this for the show, so this is all news to me as well.
Yeah, so... I have a very busy day today, and I live in Maine, and in the summer, the population triples, sometimes quadruples, because of vacationers, and so you have to kind of plan your day around the traffic, because otherwise you're going to be stuck sitting in traffic. I live on the busiest road on the East Coast, and, you know, I needed to get out this morning, because it's Friday, or else I'd be stuck in, you know, weekend traffic forever. So I decided to go to the store, and then the thing that I wanted, like, they were loading it off the truck, and so I had to wait, so I was running a little behind. But I realized I needed to do this as I had just poured a bowl of WeChex. And so I have cats who are very bad, which I might have mentioned on the show before, my very bad cats. And so I put the bowl up in the cupboard to get it when I get back. Not with milk in it. I just, you know, put it up in the cupboard. Got home, did all my stuff, started to... I was like, oh, my cereal! I said I gotta get cereal. But, like, forgetting that I had already filled the bowl with WeChex. So I grabbed it off the shelf and, like, threw them all up in the air. They went, psh, all over the kitchen.
It's raining Chex.
Yeah. And I'm, like, trying to sweep them up and I keep hearing, because the cat is eating them. And I'm just like, stop it. Oh, yeah. So that was my cereal emergency this morning. Because I couldn't just leave it. Because knowing my husband, he would have just walked into the house and, like, walked all over them. And
yeah.
You know, I mean. It would have been like, what's that? And, like, left them. And, like, you know.
The cats would have just been in, like, a Chex coma.
Yeah.
Like, Chex, Chex, Chex.
Yeah, they'll eat pretty much anything. One of them. Not Zevon, but Farouk will eat pretty much anything. So I had to clean it up. That was my big emergency this morning.
It all worked out.
Yeah. I thought I had an emergency last night. I like critters in my yard. I've talked about that before. You know, I like to look out the window at the birds and the squirrels. And at night, there's foxes and skunks and raccoons. And we have these floodlights, you know, like these solar-powered floodlights around the house. So, like, we can see in the lawn at night. And last night, you know, I kept peeking out the window because the raccoons come out. There's, like, a family of them, and they're really cute. And I kept peeking out the window, and then, like, I looked out the window, and I saw this, like, shadow of a person. And I was like, like, terrified, right? I'm like, oh, my goodness, there's somebody in my yard. There's someone standing in my yard. And I'm, like, watching it, and, like, it just kind of, like, moves from, like, side to side a little bit. And I'm like, that's weird. And so I moved to a different spot of my house, and I looked out at the light, and there was a moth on the light. And he's like, look at me! I'm doing shadow puppets! Yeah, it was a moth. He's like, look at me, I'm a human. He was like impressing all his friends with his shadow puppets.
Oh my god, that just took me out. I'm so sorry to our editor, Jensen, who I just laughed very loud into the mic. Whew, yeah, that was great.
But for like a brief second, I was terrified. I was like, there's someone standing in my yard. But it reminded me of my very favorite Sesame Street skit from when I was a little kid. There's this like 1 minute thing where there's this little boy named Gerald and he's going to bed and his parents are saying goodnight to him and to his dog Sparky, who's sleeping on his bed. And every time they turn the lights off, he sees an alligator like on the wall being like, "Rawr, I'm an alligator." And they finally like figure out that it's the dog like doing shadow puppets. The dog like sings a little song. He's like, aww. What does he say? He's like, "I'm afraid of getting thinner. Won't you please become my dinner, alligator?" Like, I don't know if that's copyrighted or anything, but it's like the best thing ever. And that's what it reminded me of. This moth was like, "I'm going to mess you up. Good luck sleeping tonight."
God, I never know what I'm going to get on these recordings, Lib. And you did not disappoint that awesome, like, low timbre in your voice as you sang along. You did great.
I think I did a pretty good imitation. I do some really good Muppet voices. Also, I just sound like a human Muppet. Also, I know none of you will believe me, but I haven't had any caffeine today. And on that note, we're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or If the Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Penguin Team. In a world where the children of the gods inherit their powers, a descendant of the Greek Fates must solve a series of impossible murders to save her sisters, her soulmate, and her city. Descendants of the Fates are always born in threes. There's one to weave, one to draw, and one to cut the threads that connect people to the things they love and to life itself. And the Aura sisters are no exceptions. There is Io, the youngest, who uses her Fate-born abilities as a private investigator, but her latest job leads her to a horrific discovery. Somebody is abducting women and setting the resulting wraiths loose in the city to kill. Now, the second book in the series, Hearts That Cut, will be on sale June 18th, 2024. This is a must-read for all Greek mythology and fantasy fans. This is dripping with atmosphere, edged with danger. Threads That Bind weaves together a gorgeous dark tapestry of mystery, faded romance, and modern myth. You won't be able to put this one down, and that comes from Alexandra Bracken, New York Times bestselling author of Lore. So make sure to pick up Threads That Bind by Kitsa Hatsopoulou, and thanks again to Penguin Teen for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, yeah. I swear, no caffeine yet. It's been too busy cleaning up cereal. But I'm just so jazzed because I get to talk about my favorite book of the year today. Oh. And that is just so exciting. Before I do that, though, another exciting thing that we need to tell you is that we are hiring an editorial operations associate. So you can come and work with Book Riot and try and wrangle me. If you love getting into the nitty-gritty of behind-the-scenes work, we are looking for someone to help us keep our metaphorical content trains running smoothly, and you get to work with the op-eds team to support editorial and the Book Riot writers. We are committed to building an inclusive workforce and strongly encourage applications from women, individuals with disabilities, and people of color. So you can apply by August 8th, 2022 by going to bookriot.com/join. us. And I'm really not that bad, I promise.
No, she's actually quite great.
I just promise. Sound like a lot of work. So anyway, getting back to books now, because
oh my goodness,
I feel like I've talked about this book 800 million times, and I probably have, because I put it in like the best book we read this month, the best book we've read so far, the book we're looking forward to, the book we're looking forward to this month. I've been on several other podcasts being like, this is what you need to know about next year. It's finally here. And it is Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield. This is one of the most perfect, gorgeous novels I have ever read. Last year on Twitter, Kristen Arnett was like, I just read the best book I've ever read. So of course everyone's like, what is the book? And she said, it's Our Wives Under the Sea. So I reached out to the publisher and they put me in touch with the editor who sent me a bound manuscript. And I read it and I was like, I have already read the best book of 2022 and it's only July of 2021. Like, what am I going to do now? It is so good. It's this slim queer romance with some speculative elements. And I love it so much. It's about a couple, Leah and Miri. Leah is a marine biologist and she goes on a submarine expedition to look at things under the sea, because that is where you find things under the sea that you study. And she's working for this new company, and Miri's at home waiting for Leah to return. She has like a 2-week window, I think, where she's going to be down on the ocean floor looking at things in the dark. And after the 2 weeks, Leah's submarine doesn't come back. Like, it doesn't rise to the top. And Miri's like a little worried. And as the hours and then the days go by, she's getting more and more worried. And she's trying to reach somebody at this new company where Leah works. And she's not getting any help. They're like passing her around and she's not getting any answers. And then eventually, like, they just stop taking her calls and she doesn't know what to do. Like, her wife is missing and she doesn't know what to do. Meanwhile, in between these chapters, we get an idea of what's going on in the submarine with Leah and the two other marine biologists who are down there with her. And it's some beautiful, dark stuff, you know, under the sea. And it's just, ugh. But wait, there is more, because eventually Leah's submarine does come back way past the time it was supposed to. And when Leah's submarine comes back, Leah is not quite the same person that she was. She doesn't really talk about what happened when she was down there. She doesn't want to leave the apartment. She keeps turning all the faucets on in the house. She keeps filling up the bathtub and sitting in it. And Miri doesn't know what to do. Like, first she was like missing her wife and she was grieving and she didn't know where she was. And now her wife is home, but she's not the same person that she was. And she's trying to take care of her and figure out what happened to her. And it's just, ugh, it's sublime. Like, pun intended. It's amazing. It's about their love and how people change and relationships change. And I will say, I read this book and I was like, that was like the most beautiful, amazing book that I've read. And then I passed it on to one of my friends who was like, that was so scary. Like, I didn't find it scary. So I read it again and I was like, did not find it scary. So another one of my friends read it and was like, amazing. That was really scary. So I guess this book could be considered scary. I mean, I am afraid of things under the sea. Like, I don't go in the ocean. Like, there's stuff in there, you know, like, no thank you. But so that kind of scares me, but I did not find it scary. But there is some body horror. I want to give content warnings for body horror, suicide, loss, grief, and animal death, which, if I'm being honest, I don't remember why I wrote that down in my notes. So just know that going in, like, I don't remember anymore. But it is just amazing. Like, you know, I have a few favorite books of the year. Obviously, Unlikely Animals, you know, is like an amazing book and it's big and long and full of all kinds of different story plots and it's very intricate and it's funny. And this one is very slim and the writing is just like crystal. It's just clear and perfect and I'm so in love with it. And yes, I'm going to stop going on and on about it, but that is Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield.
Well, I officially put that in my cart. So
oh my goodness.
As you were talking.
I love it so much.
I edit as one of my jobs as editor is that I touch essentially at some point or another almost all of our newsletters and podcasts. And after a while, you start to kind of like spin with your TBR because I spend my day, like a huge chunk of my day, reading other people's recommendations for books. And I have absolutely clocked you mentioning this book on several different occasions. But I'm like, yes, it's officially time to add it to my pile.
Every chance I can get. Every chance. I just also want to mention that Julia Armfield has an amazing collection of stories that came out before that called Salt Slow. So,
oh, that she's Salt Slow. You're right. Oh, yes. Okay. Well, that just convinced me further.
Excellent. Now convince me.
Yeah, I will. I don't know if I have as much Muppet arming for my book, but it is really good. So my first pick is The It Girl by Ruth Ware. Ruth Ware has become kind of an auto read for me. She scratches a lot of the Agatha Christie itch that I like in modern mystery. She's just like always kind of knocks it out of the park for me. She's the author of, gosh, a million books, but The Woman in Cabin 10, What was the last one that I really loved by her? In a Dark, Dark Wood, I think. Oh, and then the one last year that she put out that, of course, I am blanking on the name of, but it was the one set in like the Swiss Alps. I think it's called The One or something like that. And that one was really, really great. So this is her latest. At the start of the book, our main character, whose name is Hannah, is reliving a memory. She's walking through a quad at Oxford at night, and she's approaching her rooms, like her, you know, dorms, basically. She goes up 4 flights to her room, she approaches the door, and she keeps commenting over and over about the door being open and how, like, why didn't she notice the door was open? The door being open was a bad sign. She should have known something was wrong. And that's because when she opened that door, inside was the dead body of her roommate and best friend, April. So the book then from there on is basically told, well, from the beginning, it's told in flashbacks. We get before and after chapters, like when it goes back and forth between the two. In the after, we meet Hannah, and it's, I think, a decade later. She's now working at a children's bookshop. She's married, she's pregnant, and she's living sort of a small and quiet existence intentionally. It's kind of how she likes it. And she's at work when her cell phone rings, and it's her mom. And her mom isn't one to call randomly, period, even less so during the workday. So Hannah picks up and is like, everything okay? And it's kind of clear from the beginning that something's not. So her mom says, you know, have you seen the news? She's like, no. Why? She's like, John Neville, he's dead. And so she had a heart attack in prison. And so this news of this person named John Neville being dead is clearly having an effect on Hannah. She sort of goes numb. And then we flash back again to the before and then to the after and the before. And in the before, we meet Hannah as a teen. She's arriving at Oxford for the first time. She's like young and wide-eyed, and she comes from this humble background. So she's so ecstatic to be studying at Oxford and to be staying in these very, like, the classic, like, old school style rooms to get to, you know, study where the greats studied. She is, however, surprised to see that there's someone in the room that she was told that she was going to have to herself. That's when she meets this girl named April Clark Cliveden. And April is, as you may have guessed from the title, the it girl. She's very, like, fancy and put together. She's got luggage that costs more than, like, everything Hannah owns. She's very posh, comes from a really wealthy, well-to-do, like, you should know who I am type of family. And because her dad pulled some strings, she got a last-minute housing assignment, and so now she's Hannah's new roommate. And she's just sort of one of those, you know, big, larger-than-life, sparkling, vivacious personalities. She's bright, despite what people say about her. Like, everybody sort of assumes that she gets good grades because her dad paid for them, but she's actually super smart and kind of works, you know, her butt off. But she's also has a vicious side. She's a consummate practical joker, and she's a little bit vengeful. So, like, if she believes that someone has done her wrong, whether, you know, just because of her perception or because it actually happened, she tends to kind of hone her sights on that person. But Hannah is sort of, again, drawn into her orbit. And before she knows it, Hannah is part of a group of friends that are all sort of inseparable. So it's Will, Hugh, Ryan, Emily, and then, you know, Hannah and April. But by the end of the year, as we know from that, you know, first kind of flashback, April is dead. And John Neville, who was a porter at the school with some really, really creepy tendencies, was convicted of that murder with help from Hannah's testimony. And this is all not spoiler because it happens, you know, in the very beginning of the book. But in the after, again, very beginning of the book, we know that, so like I mentioned, Hannah is pregnant. Well, she's also married to Will, and Will was April's boyfriend back in school. And with the news of John Neville's death in the, you know, present, a reporter tracks Hannah down to say that he might have evidence that Neville was actually innocent. And the story unfolds from there. It definitely kept me guessing. I think I've said before that I'm not a person who necessarily, like, needs to, like, even if I solve it, if the book is well written, I don't really tend to mind, but I didn't solve it. I maybe towards the end had an inkling, but I absolutely was led in a different direction, you know, quite deftly by the author. This is really good on audio if you're a person who audios. It's narrated by Imogen Church, who has done at least the last several, if not all, of Ruth Ware's books, plus stuff from other authors like Lucy Foley and Paula Hawkins and Nikki French. But it was just so much fun. I had a really good time with it. I will say if you do the audio, it is very slow if you leave it at that 1.0. I had to double that. I think I may have even listened to it at 2.0, which I never, ever do. But anyway, really great, riveting read. I had a lot of fun with this one. So that's The It Girl by Ruth Ware.
Oh, right. You didn't have to convince me of that one because I read it. It's funny because you know, I do a lot of reading like really early on. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh yeah, this one, I have to read this one. And you started talking about it. I'm like, I read it.
I'm sure you do that somewhat often.
Oh, more and more these days than I used to. My brain is not what it used to be. Oh my goodness! Speaking of which, I forgot to tell you that yesterday was the best day of my life. I was gonna tell you that when we got on the phone, and I forgot to tell you. I saw a dog in a convertible wearing goggles. Like, I was sitting waiting.
What in the Mad Libs podcasting have I stepped into today?
Like, it's completely, like, random just mentioning this because it was the best thing ever. He was, like, in a convertible at a stoplight, and I was waiting for my husband to come out of the drugstore, and I was like, is that dog wearing sunglasses? And I was like, he's wearing goggles. Nope. He's wearing goggles. And, like, I got it on film, but you can't, like, really tell because he's far away, but it was the best thing ever.
I'm very happy for you in this important moment.
Thank you. I marked it down. It was very exciting. Very
July 8th.
Yeah, it was July 7th. I saw.
Oh, yes, today's the 8th. I already marked it down.
Yeah.
Mama.
Yeah. See, it's already burned on my brain on like a lot of things, like the fact that I put cereal in that bowl. All right. So my next book for today is actually a paperback release that somehow, even though it's like a book riot favorite, I guess we didn't talk about it on the podcast last year when it came out.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about it now. It is We Have Always Been Here by Lena Nguyen. And this one is scary. I'll tell you right there, it is scary. So get ready. Hold on to your butts because it is a scary spaceship story. I love a scary spaceship story. Like the S.A. Barnes, Dead Silence, I don't know if that was this year or last year. I can't even remember anymore. But I love like Event Horizon, Prometheus kind of scary thing, even though Prometheus is a terrible movie. So this one is about a psychologist named Dr. Grace Park. She is on a survey ship that is headed to this planet that has never been explored before. It's way in the future. The Earth is a hot mess, like even more than usual. The Earth has decided it no longer wants humans on it, and this weird event has taken place where all this growth has come up overnight and, like, forced people out of their homes, like, literally, and people have started to live in these domes, and there's no more space, so people are headed off to space, we're checking out all these planets, we're doing all these things, and so now there's this survey team going to check out this icy planet that no one's ever landed on before. And now Dr. Grace Park is there. She is second in command as far as a psychiatrist. There's her coworker, Dr. Keller, who is in charge. And then there's like a crew of like 11 more people, like a couple of security people and a cartographer and, you know, the captain. They don't like Grace, this team. They've been on this ship for like 10 months. And now at the beginning of the book, they have landed on this planet. And part of it is that she's not conscripted. Most of the people on the ship are conscripted, which means that they basically pledge to do anything that the company tells them to do so that they can get off planet and find homes for their families. And she is not, so she can just get fired if she does bad at her job. But basically, it's her job to tell the company, you know, what the other people are doing. So they see her as a spy, and they don't really trust her. Plus, she seems to get along better with the android crew on the ship than she does with the humans, and they hate the androids. They're made to look like humans, they have expressions, they talk to people, and as they go along and interact, they pick up on more and more, so they learn more things, like swearing and asking questions and checking on people and stuff. And so they don't really trust Grace, and she's not having a great time. And when they get to the planet, weird things start happening almost immediately. Like, through reasons that I'm not going to tell you, Grace is suddenly the only psychiatrist on the ship. And she's like, this wasn't my job. I was just supposed to be backup. And she kind of like, her specialty is reading faces and like little ticks and like little squints. And like when people make little frowny lines, like she interprets those for the head psychologist. And now she's in charge and they don't want to talk to her because they don't trust her. But also some people start having nightmares, but they're also similar to one another. Like, how are they having shared nightmares? And she doesn't know what to do. The person in charge of the androids is incapacitated, so no one is there to correct them or fix them. So the androids begin to behave strangely. And now Grace is thinking about it. She's like, wait a second. When they send out survey teams to check out a planet, they send out like 100 people on a crew. And they send all kinds of engineers and architects, and instead we've got like a bunch of security people and two psychiatrists and some androids. Like, this isn't right. And she's like kicking herself for not realizing this ahead of time, and she doesn't know what to do. But as the days go on, things get stranger and weirder and more violent. And in between this, we start to get the transcripts of these two explorers who have found an uncharted planet and decided to explore it, even though they are not supposed to. That is against regulations in the Federation. They decide they're going to go check out this uncharted planet and maybe, you know, come back and say, like, give us a bazillion dollars and we'll tell you where to find this new planet. So they have big dreams, but it's not going to work out well for them. So it's super creepy. The spaceship is really big and dark and has all these tunnels. There's no windows. And also, Grace is not allowed off the ship because she's not conscripted. She has no work on the planet, so she's not allowed to leave the spaceship. So she has to spend all her time on the ship in the artificial light. She doesn't know what's going on outside. They're not allowed to tell her because she's not conscripted. So like, they come back and it's obvious that things have happened, but she's not allowed to know what they are. So she's just on the ship, like, wondering what's happening outside. And it just gets creepier and creepier. And violent. It gets violent, as you can imagine. This is a scary book, but it's so much fun, and so many rioters love it and recommend it. It is... Oh, let me give you the content warnings before I forget. There is content warnings for violence, self-harm, body horror, and death. This is We Have Always Been Here by Lena Nguyen.
When everybody was talking about that book last year, I read a book, I just happened to have read it around the same time, that's called... like the exact same thing, except it's by Samira.
Yes.
Or Samrahabi. Yeah. So when people were like, this book is really scary and it's creepy and whatever, I'm like, well, yes, like racism and homophobia, like, you know, but like, I remember thinking, yeah, like, no, but it's not like that kind of creepy though. And then maybe 2 weeks later, I was like, oh, it's a different book. So I've been meaning,
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
Yeah,
and
it
like
does.
Sometimes the publisher catches it and they change the title. Like, there's a new Adam Sternberg coming out at the beginning of next year in March, and there's an Alex Finlay novel coming out like the month before, and they both have the same title, so they just changed.
Oh my gosh.
They just changed it. But sometimes it doesn't happen. Like, I remember last year there were two books by this title, so I'm sure there were a lot of people who were like, this book isn't set in space, you know?
Yeah, no, I was very much like, I don't really get the, not in that way, scary. I felt very silly afterwards.
But also an excellent book.
Very, oh, I loved it. I love that book.
All right, what do you have next?
My next one is a memoir that I also loved, and it's called Crying in the Bathroom by Erika L. Sanchez. Erika Sanchez is the author of a YA book that I also loved and that many of you did as well, called I'm Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter. I believe it's being adapted. It feels like everything's being adapted. I just don't remember like what the progress is on that. But, oh, such a great YA book that feels in some ways a lot like autofiction. Not in all ways, but anyway, so to tell you a little bit about Erika, so this is her memoir. It's about her life, obviously. It starts with her childhood, where she grew up pretty poor, actually, the daughter of Mexican immigrants in like 1990s Chicago. She was always sort of a misfit with a dark soul. She loved comedy, always did, but had like a really dark sense of humor and a foul mouth, you know, qualities that, especially in communities of color, are like often, you know, they're not feminine. You shouldn't act that way. You're not supposed to act that way as a lady. And so it's a story of how she just sort of always felt a little bit out of place, but had big dreams to become a writer. She was always drawn to like artistic expression and didn't really see a lot of examples of people of color and, you know, like young Mexican women like getting to do that, but was pretty determined to do so. And I mean, talk about grit. Like, she pursued all the way up to higher education. She's actually a Fulbright scholar. But this memoir is very, just so, so incredibly candid and honest about like, kind of, I mean, really the messiness of life. Like, she goes, you know, through her childhood, through to, you know, her high school years, and then eventually her 20s, that like, just messiness of your 20s, everything from, you know, casual sex, good and bad relationships, drug and alcohol use. But she's also really, really candid about her mental health struggles. This is a theme that kind of works its way consistently through the book. It's just, oh, she goes back to like her college days and talks about traveling, you know, eventually studying and then living abroad, and through all of the struggles that she was going through and trying to kind of find her sense of place and identity and dealing with that mental health struggle, the truly transformative power, I know words, transformative power of comedy, of art in general, and travel, and like how good those things were for the soul, what it's like to challenge the ideals that you grew up with. And I can definitely speak to a lot of that, feeling really relatable coming from a, you know, very similar Mexican American background, finding different ways to express her spirituality that broke out of the mold that she just didn't see for herself in, you know, like a really strict Catholic background. It's a meditation on the importance of having choices, and this book was written well before, obviously, the current moment that we're going through with the overturning of Roe v. Wade and women just suddenly having their choice having been ripped out from under them. But this book is a strong meditation on that as well. She does talk about an experience with abortion. There's just so much in here that I feel like I'm not doing justice, but it's just, again, like, you hear that word tossed around a lot. It's, you know, honest and candid, but she really just holds, she pulls no punches. Like, she's very, very upfront. She's got that, again, dark sense of humor, sort of, you know, vulgar mouth, all of which I highly enjoy. On one, you know, page, you're laughing really, really hard at some funny story that she's telling, and then a few pages later, I feel the tears welling up when she's talking about, you know, what it was like to figure out that she was, you know, pregnant with, like, the wrong person's child, or what it was like to kind of discover who she really was while, you know, overseas. And there's just so much in here that I clung to as I was reading it. It's also narrated by her on audio, and she did a really great job with it. So if audio is your jam, I'm just all about the audiobooks lately, but it's just such a wonderful, touching, raw is a really great word for this memoir that I loved spending time with, and that kind of helped fill in the gaps and learn more about the woman behind this YA book that I saw a lot of myself in as well. So that is Crying in the Bathroom, a memoir by Erika L. Sanchez.
Oh, right. I couldn't find my mute button there for a second. I was like, where did it go? We use a different format for recording, basically, between each of us, because some people can't get Skype to work where they are in the country, and some of us can't
so
get
weird.
The Slack calls to work where we are, so you and I are using Zencastr, and I'm like, where's the mute button on this one? I can never remember. Is it down below? Is it on my Chrome? I have to find it. Anyway, so I'm going to now tell you about my first choice for books that we are excited about that we may or may have not read. But before I do that, we are going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number 6. So if he is to have 7 great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawk, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawk on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode.
All right, so I know everyone is super excited for this book, and I did happen to read it. It is What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher. Now, T. Kingfisher, love, 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 right? Like, has written a gazillion novels, both under T. Kingfisher and her real name, which is Ursula Vernon. She wrote the Dragon Breath graphic novel series for kids, which is so, so cute. And also the horror comedies, the Twisted Ones, and the Hollow Places. And my like, favorite fantasy book of the year. One of the best. More people read this, please, because I still am not seeing it on Instagram or BookTok. It is Nettle and Bone, which I talked about earlier in the year. Just love this fantasy book. And we are so lucky because we have two books from T. Kingfisher this year. This one is actually very slim. It's coming out from Torrent Nightfire. It's a horror story. And it is based on The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe, which I have not read. So I went into this, started reading it, and then I went back to look something up, and I was like, oh, it's based on that. Okay, well, I'm just gonna have to go with it, because I don't know. But this is about a retired soldier named Alex Easton, and they get a letter from their childhood friend, Madeline Usher, who tells them, please, 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 come to the house of Usher right away. You know, everything is horrible. I'm very ill. And when Alex gets there, they discover that, yes, indeed, Madeline is dying, and her brother is, something is going on with him. And also, their house is surrounded by super creepy mushrooms. So if you're not into fungi horror, like, drop out now. And so there's these mushrooms everywhere, and also some rabbits who are behaving very strangely. Or hares, I should say. They are hares in the book, apparently. They are larger than rabbits. I'm learning all kinds of things. And so at night, Madeline sleepwalks, and her brother continues to get very nervous and weird, and he's having nightmares. And there's a doctor, Denton, there with them, and Alex and Denton are trying to figure out what to do. They don't know what to do. But there's also this really cool British lady who is the aunt of Beatrix Potter and an expert on mushrooms who hangs out, and they're trying to figure this all out before the hares and the mushrooms get them all. It's, like I said, it's only 170 pages. It's based on the Edgar Allan Poe story, and it's very creepy. It's really fun. It's quite funny. And also, one of the great things about it is that when I was reading this, I started reading it, and I was like, oh, mushrooms, okay. Like Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia. And when you read, I'm not spoiling anything for you, when you read this book, What Moves the Dead, there is an afterword in which T. Kingfisher is like, so I had this idea, and my editors were like, yes, 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 give us creepy mushroom book. And I started writing it, and then I read Mexican Gothic and was like, no, a creepy mushroom book, and it's so much better than mine. She's like, never mind, I'm not going to do this. And her editor's like, you are going to do the thing. So she did turn in her creepy mushroom book, but she highly recommends that everyone go and read Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia, which we all do, really. And so that was very funny. And it's just, it's fun. It's very slim, a little creepy. And now I need to read the story. I'm assuming it will be very easy to find online. You know, if I go looking for it, the Edgar Allan Poe story, I mean, it must be, you know, public domain. And yeah, he's quite old, so that would be correct. Yes. And
he's quite old.
Yeah.
Famously dead, yes.
So, in the last couple of books that T. Kingfisher has done, her horror books, there is a dog, and everyone's always worried about the dog. And so we like to tell you, you know, ahead of time, slight spoiler, you know, that the dog makes it. So in this book, there is a horse who is very much like a dog, has very dog-like qualities. So I'm going to spoil it for you right now about the horse, and if you don't want to hear, cover your ears. But yes, the horse does make it, so don't worry about the horse. But it's not so good for some of the rabbits, I mean the hares. And content warnings also for body horror, gore, suicide, illness, and loss of a loved one, murder, animal death, because rabbits, I mean hares. Why can't I call them hares? And then also war and PTSD related to war. So this one is What Moves the Dead, and it's by T. Kingfisher.
I just realized that I didn't give trigger warnings for my last pick.
Go for it.
Need to do that because you probably picked up on a lot of it from that description, but trigger warning for brief mentions of sexual assault, not graphic and mostly off page, but also everything that comes with mental health struggles, including suicidal ideation. And also want to say that I was bamboozled into reading Mexican Gothic, bamboozled by myself, really, because I love Silvia Moreno Garcia. I'll read anything she writes, but I love eating mushrooms, cannot stand the sight of them, like, especially in like a really growthy,
because they're creepy.
Fungal way. And then, oh my gosh, and reading that book, I was just like, like I powered through, but oh my gosh. And I really wanted to read the T. Kingfisher book, but now I'm thinking I may need to take a breather.
So let me ask you, how do you feel about the Smurfs?
I do like the Smurfs.
They're
cute
mushrooms?
Enough to not, yes, but they're like, I don't know, whenever they're like drawn really clean, lightedly, it doesn't, yeah, it's when I see, especially when they're like just, oh my gosh, and everybody here in Oregon loves to forage for mushrooms, so like you see them out in the wild, and I see them, my skin immediately crawls, like I just, I can't, I love eating them. Chop them up and put them in a saute pan. Delicious. Yeah. But that's about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, not my bag. My skin is just one giant goosebump
well,
right
now.
Well,
this is not the book for you. But speaking of Sylvia Merino Garcia, you know, she has a novel coming out soon.
Daughter of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, yes. Which is based on The Island of Dr. Moreau, which I have not read. But I did read the Joe Gregory book based on it and the Sylvia Merino Garcia. So maybe I should, like, actually read the Dr. Moreau.
I like how everything today is like, here's stories that we love that we have not read the original it's based off
yeah.
of. That's fine.
Well, I mean, you don't have to know anything about it.
Nope.
I don't think, you know. Like, when my friend is a huge T. Kingfisher fan, and when I told her there was a new book, she's like, but I haven't read the Edgar Allan Poe. And I'm like, I don't think you have to.
No.
Like, if you want to, like, compare it side by side, then by
sure.
all means, you know, like, that's probably that's... fun, too. I like to do that with, you know, Agatha Christie books and adaptations.
Same.
And be like, that's not what happened, you know. Like, Jaws. That is not what happened in the movie. Like,
aw, Jaws.
So different, you know. The book is such garbage. And that is a hill I will die on. And so, you know, if that's what you like to do, then by all means, please. I keep saying by all means because I just listened to Hamilton this morning. I was kidding.
We are on one today.
Anyway.
This is a journey. And I will now take us in a different direction.
Hope you brought your walking shoes and some water. All right. Go ahead.
Oh, gosh. I'm having a great time. Okay.
So...
I have not read either of my next two picks. This one actually came out last week, and I've seen so much buzz, again, in editing other people's content that it finally just broke through that list that, like, I don't know, I need to add it to my list space in my brain, and that's Acts of Violet by Margarita Montemore, which I think is just the most fancy name. Margarita Montemore. So she is the author of a book that had a lot of buzz last year called Una Out of Order that I feel like I also saw everywhere but never got around to reading, even though I think I own it. Story of our life. But this, Jamie Canaves, who does our Unusual Suspects newsletter, a lot of our on-site mystery content, and just tons of stuff for Book Riot, but she's a person that I go to a lot for recommendations in general, definitely, but also specifically for audiobooks. And she recommended this one and called it one of her favorite books of the year, so it was an automatic add. Apparently the audiobook is, I looked it up, it looks like a giant ensemble cast, and parts of the book are told as interviews and as a podcast. So I guess she said it was so good that she would sometimes forget that it was a novel and not an actual podcast. So we get a mystery and a family drama in one, as Jamie puts it. It's about a famous musician named Violet Volk, I think. And she disappeared a decade ago in the middle of an act, actually. She vanished mid-act. And she's never been seen since. So the book takes place, again, like 10 years later. Violet was always the kind of person who sought out the spotlight, but her sister Sasha was sort of the opposite. She was always like the really responsible one who took over their mother's salon and kind of built a life, quiet life for herself and her daughter. Sasha was the one who always wanted to be in the spotlight Violet was. And so Sasha kind of always felt like she couldn't escape her sister's orbit. And she's sort of been plagued by memories of their unresolved and just not great relationship at the time, you know, of Violet's disappearance. And then there's somebody named Cameron who is determined to kind of get his big break in podcasting. And what he is podcasting about is a show that is completely dedicated to all things Violet. He wants to kind of, you know, blow it up for the 10-year anniversary of her disappearance. And he's doing so by essentially interviewing anyone and everyone who had anything to do with Violet. And his job depends at this point on nailing an exclusive interview with Sasha. But she doesn't want to talk to him. She doesn't want anything to do with the podcast, no matter how much people, you know, hound her about it. She just doesn't want anything to do with it or all of the, you know, conflicting theories, especially since she herself was often included in those theories as to, like, what might have happened to her sister. So between the current life, you know, we get, you know, Sasha's current life and then the podcast transcripts that go, you know, back into Violet and Sasha's history, the stories are slowly kind of colliding for us to, you know, possibly see what happened. So I love the format. The format really intrigues me, and I love anything with, yeah, like magicians and magic. So this sounds really, really fun. That's Acts of Violet by Margarita Montemore. And that actually came out last week.
All right. It's okay that you didn't read Una Out of Order yet, because since the book is all over the place, like why read it in a timely fashion, right?
Yeah, it's literally about that.
Like, yeah. You're really going with the theme if you read it in a little bit.
See, I try.
Yeah. Or go wild. Read the end first. See what happens. So my next pick I am so excited about It is Venomous Lump Sucker, which is like the best name, right? First of all.
And the best cover.
Yes. Oh, yes. I was going to mention that. I have to finish what I'm saying, though.
I'm sorry. That's okay. I stole your thunder. I'm sorry.
I got so excited about the cover. I was like, who is this? Oh, yeah. So it's Venomous Lump Sucker, and it's by Ned Bowman, who I love. He writes the most bizarre, amazing, smart, weird stories. He wrote The Teleportation Accident, which is the best ending of any book I've ever read. And just love it. Also, Boxer Beetle, Madness is Better Than Defeat, Glow. They're just like these trippy, smart, weird books. And this one is about the future in about 15 or 20 years where most of the species on the planet have gone extinct. And scientists are trying to preserve them by cloning them. But then there is an act of cyber terrorism, which wipes out all of these biobanks and all of the DNA for all these animals that we were trying to replace. And it's about these two scientists who are really concerned mostly about the venomous lump sucker. Like, it's the smartest fish on the planet, and it's the one that they really feel like needs to come back. And it's almost extinct, so they're going to try and find it. And yes, so the cover of this book, like, it's my favorite color combination. It has been since I was a child. I don't know why. It is fluorescent pink and fluorescent green, which is, like, amazing. Kind of like The Gone Away World by Nick Harkaway. I love a cover that you can see from space. Venomous Lump Sucker, not a pretty fish. I'm not gonna lie. Not a pretty fish. He's right there on the cover. But he looks like he has a lot of personality. And I just am so excited about this book. I haven't gotten to it yet, and I don't know why. However, my husband's friend was here last week, and he's like, I need something to read. And I said, read this and tell me how it's going. So yesterday I checked in with him, and he was like, I'm on chapter 4, and it's amazing. And I was like, all right, so I'll have to get to that soon. But I do love Ned Bowman so much that I used to, like, pester the publisher when I found out that he had a new book coming. And he'd be like, all right, just leave me alone, and I'll get it for you. I was like, yay! So I don't know why I didn't get to this one yet, but I'm going to. And I'm going to stop talking now. It is Venomous Lump Sucker by Ned Bowman.
Who has a great personality. Well, the fish does.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, so I'm going to round us out. that's that kind of day. With another one that I cannot believe I haven't read yet, because this sounds so amazing, and I did not know anything about this author. So the book is called The Man Who Could Move Clouds by Ingrid Rojas Contreras. And she is the author of a book that I also have owned for many years but not read, called Fruit of the Drunken Tree.
Which is amazing. It's amazing. It's a lot.
Oh, I know, and that's why I'm, like, so mad that I haven't read it.
Like, it's a lot. It's really hard to read, but it's good.
I know. That's why I haven't read it, because yeah, I just haven't been in the place.
But amazing.
But, dude, this story, though, like, her background is just so, so fascinating. Like, I cannot wait to read this. So, for her, magic has always run in the family. So, that immediately had me. I was like, tell me more. And I am Latin American, and so many of these things just make so much sense to me. And if you are as well, or just, like, come from a lot of different, you know, brown cultures that incorporate sort of magic and these kinds of customs in your culture, you're just going to love this. So she was raised amid the political violence of 80s and 90s Colombia, and her house was always bustling because her mom was a fortune teller. So she always had clients coming in and out of the house. And so she was sort of a person who's hard to surprise because she's sort of seen a lot of the interesting things that life has to offer. Her maternal grandfather, Nono, was also a renowned curandero. And, like, I don't know, I grew up going to see curanderos. They're like community healers, basically. But her, you know, her grandfather in particular was gifted with what the family called the secrets, which was the power to talk to the dead, to tell the future, treat the sick, and move the clouds. And again, some of these things are things that I very much remember growing up with. Like, we all knew a curandero who could maybe do some of these things. So her mother was the first woman in the family to inherit, you know, quote unquote, the secrets, this, like, same ability. So Ingrid Rojas Contreras just always saw her mom as being this, like, super powerful person, and she just seemed to have, you know, uncanny abilities that one couldn't really, you know, explain. And so this legacy was something that she always felt like belonged more to her mom and grandfather, and that she didn't connect with or feel like she had anything to do with. But then when she was living in the U.S. in her 20s, she suffered a head injury that left her with amnesia. And as she was regaining her memory, her family was super jazzed about what had happened to her. She's like, get away. And it's because decades before, her own mother also sustained a fall that left her with amnesia. And she said that basically in her recovery, that's when she gained access to the secrets. And so then in 2012, after a shared dream, which is apparently a the theme of some of the books we've talked about today, but a shared dream that she had with her mom and her sisters, she just was overcome with this powerful urge to like learn her family history in the aftermath of all that she's been going through, you know, with her memory loss and all of these things that are allegedly maybe going to happen to her. So she and her mom go on a journey back to Colombia to disinter her nono's remains and then kind of just go on this journey to trace her lineage back to her roots, which are, you know, indigenous and Spanish, and to uncover a lot, just the colonial narrative that has really, it came to break apart her family, as the synopsis puts, her mestizo family into two camps, those who believe the secrets are a gift and those who are convinced they are a curse. So I just think this sounds so, so fascinating. I have some relation to some of the stuff here, but really just the family dynamics period and then all the magical elements that may or may not, you know, be at play here just sound so riveting. And I really had no idea that that was, you know, the background that this author came with. So really excited to do that and maybe eventually finally gird my loins enough to read Fruit of the Drunken Tree. But that's The Man Who Could Move Clouds by Ingrid Rojas Contreras.
All right. So those are books that we may not have read, but we are excited about. Before I continue, I remember, there was one more thing that I wanted to say today. Last week on the show, I was talking about how I was reading this cute little graphic novel in the middle of the night because I had been reading a cannibal serial killer book and decided to switch it up before I went to sleep. And so many of you adorable little ADBs were like, hey, what's the cannibal serial killer book that you were reading? Which I love. I love you. You're my people. I have to say, it was just an Agent Pendergast novel. I've been rereading them because my brain can't function sometimes, you know, because of everything that's going on. So I just go back to books that require nothing of me. So I was reading White Fire by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, which is, you know, the FBI Agent Pendergast novels, in which he is like a cross between Sherlock Holmes and Richie Rich. And they're just ridiculous. Like when I read them, I'm going, this is ridiculous. Like this, like volcano fights and, you know, like making earthquakes happen and, you know, time, like it's ridiculous. And yet they're so well written, I can't stop reading them. But they are, you know, they're not great as far as like content. They're quite problematic. You know, we all have those.
Yes.
So anyway, that's what it was. I wish I had like a more exciting title for you. But I just love that so many of you were like, psst, tell us about the cannibals. So
please.
Hilarious. All right. So now we are going to do a quick round of paperback releases because that's exciting too. Starting off with Dear Miss Metropolitan by Carolyn Farrell. This was a finalist for the 2022 Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction and a finalist for the 2022 Penn Hemingway Award for Debut Novel, which is about a neighborhood in which some tragedy happens and it explores the intersections of grief and rage, personal strength and healing. Kate in Waiting by Becky Albertalli is out. It's a sort of theater romance about these two best friends who are like as close as can be, Kate and Anderson, but they both have the same crush on the same guy. And when he shows up at their school, you know, he's only going to pick one of them and it's going to cause a problem in their friendship. There's The Taking of Jake Livingston by Ryan Douglas, which is a YA horror story about a young man at a high school who is haunted by the ghost of a school shooter. Going to nonfiction, we have Body Language, Writers on Identity, Physicality, and Making Space for Ourselves, edited by Nicole Chung and Matt Ortile. It is an anthology of essays published by Catapult Magazine about the stories our bodies tell and how we move within and against expectations of race, gender, health, and ability. There's also Hooked by A.C. Wise, which is a paperback original as well. And Wise is the author of Wendy Darling, another Peter Pan story. This one is about what happens to Captain Hook after Neverland. There's The Romance Recipe, a paperback original by Ruby Barrett, about a restaurant owner who falls for her head chef. August Kitko and the Mechas from Space by Alex White, another paperback original. It is the first in the Star Metal Symphony, which I'm mentioning because I just think that's a great, great title. Star Metal Symphony just sounds beautiful and I want to hear it. It's about a jazz pianist who is spending his final moments on Earth playing the piano and kissing a rock star because the aliens are about to land and take everybody out, and then that doesn't happen. And rounding it off, we have Bet on It by Jodi Slaughter, another paperback original. This is a romance about a young woman who encounters the man of her dreams. Unfortunately, it's while she's having a panic attack in the frozen food section of the Piggly Wiggly. I have not read this one, but it has so many amazing reviews and apparently some really great mental illness and disability representation. So I'm excited to read this one. And yeah, so those are a bunch of books and some wacky stuff that came out of my mouth. What are you going to read next?
Again, it's been a journey. So the one that I need to get to that I keep stopping and starting to do other reading, but that Jamie and I have been listening to together, is A Marvelous Light by, oh my gosh, the author, is it Freya Marsk?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which I've seen described as a fluid-filled fantasy for reasons, and I am very excited. I'm maybe like halfway through and really love it, so I need to go and finish that. And then I also want to read Counterfeit by Kristen Chen, after hearing a couple different people talk about that. So
both very good. I got to interview her for her launch, which was which was really fun. And also I read the follow-up to A Marvelous Light, which I am forgetting now the title, but
oh my gosh, me too. I can see the cover in my
head.
It's
being called it's A Restless Truth. There we go. It's about the sister, and it's being called A Lesbian Knives Out on a Ship. So yeah, so that one is really great too, so you're going to be excited when you get to read that one after you finish A Marvelous Light. And I am reading Vampire Weekend by Mike Chen, which, yes, is the name of a band, but is also the name of this new novel from Mike Chen, who is a beloved Book Riot author. Everything he does is amazing, and we adore him to pieces. So this one is about a young woman who is a musician, and she's pretty punk rock, and she wants to be in a band, but she's also a vampire, and it's hard to, you know, hide who she is, because in this world of being a vampire, like, you can get in big trouble if anybody finds out that you're a vampire. Like, the other vampires will come and end you. So she's trying to keep it a secret, but then a long-lost teenage relative shows up at her door, and she's finally feeling like she's making a connection, but things are going to get dangerous. And we're going to find out why. I don't know why. I haven't finished the book yet, so. That one is Vampire Weekend by Mike Chen. And that is it for us today. We made it. I always feel like we should clap for ourselves when we finish.
Because no, after the edits that are coming out of this one, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm trying to compartmentalize, you know?
Yep.
So I got some wacky, and then I got, you know, sob and never stop. So today I went with wacky.
You are a delight.
Well, thank you. This is a delight, and everyone else is a delight, especially all those people who ask me about the cannibals. I love you the best. So that is it for us today. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink, many, many, many times today. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com if you want to talk about books or ask us questions. You can find us online. We mostly hang out on Instagram. Vanessa is Buenos Dias SD. I am Franzen Comes Alive. Don't forget that we are looking for an editorial operations associate. You can apply at bookriot.com/join-us. And if you go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review, it helps other book lovers to find us. And we thank you so much for all of you who have done that and will do that in the future. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.